We Are SC Podcast, Wednesday, November 19th, a special edition here. Gary Paskowitz joined today by former Trojan linebackers Kevin Bruce and Thomas Williams. And what we're going to do today is we're going to break down a lot of linebacker talk. Our normal We Are SC Podcast with Jeremy Hogue and Mike Lamb, two former offensive linemen that we get plenty of talk for the offensive line there. So we're going to flip it over today and talk a lot of linebacker. And let's just give a little background on these two, because we're also going to talk championship philosophies. Kevin Bruce played from 1972 to 1975 and won two national titles. Thomas Williams played from 2003 to 2007 and won two national titles. So we have two experts on the subject. First of all, guys, as we get to this podcast, there's big breaking news in the USC family in the last 24 hours, and that is going to be the reinstatement of Josh Shaw. He practiced this morning. Unavailable. I mean, Sark said he's not sure how much he'll be able to play on Saturday, but the fact of his return, Kevin, why don't you get us started? What can that mean in a big emotional week like UCLA week to have the return of Josh Shaw?
Well, it's nothing but positive for sure, and it's also a cloud over the university and the program that it dissipates as a result of his reinstatement. I'm delighted about it. We need all hands on deck. We're a little shorthanded. One thing that occurs to me is and I'm sure Wilcox and Sark will be careful about it, but not disrupting the 10 games of secondary experience with the guys that are already there. That said, it's pretty straightforward to find a good home for Josh Shaw somewhere in the secondary. It may be situational, or it could be more so, or someone goes down with an injury, God forbid. He's certainly there to go longer. Also, I think he would be a great add to the specials. I have to tell you, getting a little more speed on the specials downfield with a guy that we know can hit, I think is a good thing. His legs will be in good shape. I'm not sure what kind of football condition he's in, but line up, put on, strap on the gear, and let's go.
Thomas, how do you think this would go 10 games into the season? Do you think this is everything positive for the teammates? When you talk to the players, they wanted this guy back. There was no question about that from them.
Yeah, and just like Kevin had said, the special teams aspect and component, I mean, being an avid special teams player and so excited to play in a game like this, you get him where you run down the field as fast as you can, you hit, you make plays, if that's it. I think also another component that we can look for, and maybe Wilcox is already starting to figure this out, is that being able to have an additional player that's just responsible for spying a running, agile, mobile quarterback is extremely huge. So maybe he's in the nickel situation, maybe he's in the dime situation where everybody else is covered up and he's kind of like the hole or the quote-unquote rat player. And they're in the low defensive side, just spying on Huntley, making sure that he doesn't get carried away and get outside of containment and just able to run all over the USC defense is great. And I think, just like you said, the guys wanted him back. This isn't a situation like we've seen in the NFL recently where guys just walk out of the locker room after a game or out of practice because they're upset with playing time. These guys on the USC football team, they actually wanted this person back. So now having that, all the energy, and just like Kevin said, all hands on deck is going to be extremely positive and beneficial for the entire outcome of the game.
Let's talk. You hit on a key point, Thomas, I think, and that is, the defense against Huntley and how you are going to do that. I think you're absolutely right. I think Josh Shaw provides another perfect element to that. And I want to kind of hear your guys' thoughts on defending him. I think Sua Cravens is another one who could be a huge element in this. Kevin, why don't you get us started? If you're having to design a game plan against Huntley, what do you do with this personnel?
I tell you what, I totally mess with his head. And how do you do that? Well, he provides some different looks. Going back to our standard cover seven, whether it's zone up, man up, combinations, single halves, quarters, all the different coverage scenarios I've seen this year. Fine, those are nice. resources they have in the inventory of what can be applied, but I want pressure on this guy, and I've been harping on that for weeks now. But pressure on a quarterback changes the game. We know Hundley is a good quarterback. We know he's an extraordinary athlete. He's gifted. Okay, get that. UCLA's got playmakers. Okay, we understand that too. Where are they weak? I think they're weak on the offensive line. They've got good running backs. They've got all the periphery is strong. You got a good quarterback and make good decisions. But you can't make a good decision when you're running for your life or you're sitting on the grass looking up at the stars. And that's what we have to accomplish. How is that done? Okay. A lot of different approaches. You can't just line up and blitz like Arizona State, you know, 75-80% of the time. That's not our game. Don't do that. However, adding in a stronger, we'll call it a blitz package. I prefer to call it a pressure package, right? You know, man up on the corners, you know, weak side. You know, you're going to be, a guy's going to be on an island. How about we showcase our best defensive lineman and our best linebacker slash secondary player, Sua, and get them coming off the edge. It's a total mismatch, right? You know you're going to force Hundley away from that pressure, so he's going to move away. Move it to his offside, his offhand. Make him throw across his body. Make him move. Make him try to, you know, break down our defense and then have strong contain away from that pressure. I want to see some of those packages. I also want to see the cornerbacks being used on something other than just straight coverage. Bring them on a particular, this is very selective, but bring them on some certain, you know, situations, whether it's a third down situation or even on a first down where it's unexpected. Bring it from the weak side. Bring it from the side away from what Hundley's going to be looking at. Disguise a corner blitz. We haven't blitzed a corner or, frankly, even a safety, as far as I can tell, the entire season. This would be a great game to pull that one out of the bag because it's not like it hasn't been done before.
Thomas, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, everything that you just said is crystal clear and so perfect. The most important part of a rush and a blitz and a pressure is having a contained player. Now, what happens when you have a mobile quarterback like that? The quarterback steps up in the pocket. There's either a gap in the A or the B gap because contain's already gotten there, you know, to the seven yard marker. And then the quarterback hurries up and runs up through the middle. So the important part is to have the games, you know, where you have the me or the you games, which is a tackle, defensive tackle, and a defensive end stunt where sometimes the defensive tackle goes out. Now he's the contained man where the defensive tackle takes a couple steps upfield, wraps up underneath, and then now you have those gaps, those inside gaps taken care of. And then the point of having somebody who's responsible for Hundley. You know, when you're bringing so much pressure, the back is absolutely responsible for picking up one of those people. So you don't have to worry about him getting out on pass plays as much if you're bringing the pressure. So you have that linebacker that's responsible for him. Just stay inside, stay at home so that you can give that help to the Antoine Woods and the big guys on the inside so that they're not in an alley or on an island, so to speak, by themselves. And then, just like Kevin said, mixing it up. You don't always need to blitz a linebacker. I mean, obviously, Sewell Cravens, if I'm not mistaken, I read that he has 14 tackles for loss. Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, something
big number.
Crazy like that. So you can utilize him, whether it's bringing him off the edge, you bring him in another linebacker inside. You know, there's so many different ways, but the main thing is be creative. You know, this isn't something where we have to do it a certain way, where only this linebacker and this defensive end or this safety or this Sam linebacker can blitz. Be extremely creative. It's almost like being two and three steps ahead. And I think the defensive coordinator position, the defensive coordinators that I played with, the Coach Carrolls, the Bill Belichicks, are so smart that they enjoy that chess matchup with the strategic planning and really outsmarting their opponents.
It's funny because when Kevin mentioned the corner blitzes, Thomas, the first thing I'm thinking about is a game I know you remember. I'm thinking of Will Poole in the Rose Bowl against Michigan. What a brilliant use of the corner blitzes that day. I believe it was the double cat that P called it.
Right. So he called the double cat, and then the linebackers were responsible going for the one. But that's the the mix-up. It was the miscommunication on the offensive side of the ball that the quarterback had no idea. So he couldn't get to the number one receivers on the outside because he was so worried about them being in his face. So it only basically made the inside receivers, tight ends, or the number two receiver from outside in available.
Hey, Kevin, let me ask you a quick question. What you guys are saying in terms of defending Hundley, seems to make so much sense. And on paper, you look at it and say, okay, why can you do it? Over the years, the Trojans have historically had problems with these versatile quarterbacks who can run. Kevin, what is it that is giving us problems?
Yeah, it's a great question because it's a head-scratcher, and frankly, it's not just the escapability of a quarterback. It's also we have trouble with option teams. In the macro, I will tell you that it's because we have had challenges running a disciplined assignment gap-based defense. If X happens, this is the gap. This is the first move a person makes, right? Matter of fact, Thomas just hit something that I am most fearful of. It's the A gaps. That's the one, in my mind, because I know we can set an edge. I know we can do some other things with Hundley, but routinely, this has not been an area of strength for us this year, and our inability to manage well a mobile quarterback, I think, is symptomatic of discipline. It isn't talent. We've got plenty of talent. I tell you what, that's a good group of folks out there. There's some experience gaps, and there's a few things missing, I think, in this particular addition's defense. But I got to tell you what, that's a good group of guys. They can play. They can ball. Okay. However, not playing good assignment football will get you in trouble. And I see it with some of the youth. I see them, you know, on misdirections, overreacting, getting upfield, taking wrong angles, getting caught up inside. Thomas knows what I'm talking about. And you just kind of you smack your head, you look at it, kind of go, I know what just happened. I know why it happened. It didn't have to happen. And someday they're going to be better at it. However, we're running out of some days. Saturday is right around the corner. Here it comes. So now is the time to have a well-coached, well-prepared team that understands their assignments. And if someone's going to be a spy on Hundley, then spy on Hundley. All right? Don't overreact. Don't try to help Hayes or somebody do his job. He'll do his job just fine. Thank you very much, oh, by the way. Okay? Or other examples. Cover the A-gap. Right? Take care of that. Set a hard edge on contain. If you're bringing pressure from the other side, you know, bring the pressure. All right. We know there's going to be some weaknesses inherent in any defense you run. There's inherent weaknesses. You know what those are and react quickly back to them. And that's what I see as lacking. When Thomas was playing and was on the field, he could play any number of linebacker positions and he knew what to do. I watched him. In fact, I used to love watching him because I knew he knew the game and he played well, knew where to go. And when a certain reaction was required, bang, he was back to the weak point. I could watch it. And the good linebackers, the good defensive linemen, and the secondary players in their own way do that very thing. And that has been lacking. And for this team's defense, for this addition, for this year, there's been all manner of different looks for a defense that has been made, I think, much more complex than it needs to be, right? I think for you know, a younger team and a lesser experienced team, keep it simple, make it assignment-based, and basically you make it what I call binary. There's an A and then there's a B. There's a 1 and there's a 2. Do this, then do that, right? Anything beyond that is just reaction and athleticism.
Thomas?
Yeah, well, Kevin, first of all, thank you for the compliment. I mean, especially coming from a guy who's all Pac-8, co-captain, All-American. I mean, that was seriously, thank you very much for those kind words and laying the foundation for many great linebackers to come after you. So I appreciate that. To answer the question, I would agree again. It's understanding your assignment, right? What's the philosophy of each defense that's called, right? Are we 7 men in the box? Are we 8 men in the box? Is it man? Is it zone? Is my responsibility to do this? Because if that's my responsibility, then that's what I'm supposed to do. And I think the great defenses understand, and I think it's Stephen Covey who wrote the book, Speed of Trust, right? When you understand your assignment, then productivity goes up, right? And doing your job. There's also a defense that we used to run when Coach Carroll was there at USC and I was there. It was left and right over match. And so he had run that defense in San Francisco. And basically what was it? It was man to the boundary and zone everything away. So you have a phenomenal talent like a Dory Jackson. You can man that side. And understanding that that's the short side of the field. So the probability of any type of scramble would be to the wide side of the field where you have zone. Where you see most breakdowns and most success of these types of quarterbacks, right? The Vince Youngs, the Michael Vicks, and these fast, agile quarterbacks, the RG3s, it's all in man defenses. Because when you have man defense, it's everybody have your eyes on your man. So when your man gets 10, 12, 15, 30 yards down the field, your back is now where?
Turned.
To the line of scrimmage, right?
Right, exactly.
And so now, all of a sudden, you don't have eyes in the back of your head. So now it's just up to the two defensive ends, the two tackles, and maybe an inside linebacker that's free in coverage to try and help out and make the tackle. And so you have some of these quarterbacks running 4-4, 4-5, and it's difficult to run them down when you run a 4-6, 4-7, or whatever the case may be, trying to fight off a block. So those are the two main focuses. It's that. Understanding when we're calling zone, when we're calling man, understanding my responsibility in the defense, right? You need 11 guys making one play at a time, and then just being fundamentally sound.
Let me ask you this, guys. I want to talk Hayes Poulard for a minute and his role in this defense and what you're seeing. I'm looking at these the last two games, and you got Brett Hundley and you're going to have Everett Golson. And I'm looking at Hayes saying, you're our leader of this defense. You are the captain of this defense. You are purely the heart and soul of what's going on that side of the ball. And so if I'm looking at anybody to, if you want to say, will this defense over the next 2 weeks, I'm looking to Hayes. Kevin, am I wrong with that?
No, you're right on. Matter of fact, I am mightily comfortable having Hayes out there as the senior leader of that group. He knows football. Matter of fact, you know, if he was hurt, you could give him a whistle. He could coach really well. He knows how to play. He knows his assignments. I love the way that he reacts. Since the Stanford game where he had that somewhat questionable call, of course, from my perspective, and then
very questionable.
Yeah, I don't know how guys play tackle football today and not be able to tackle with all body parts, but that's just me talking.
That was a football play, right?
It's a football play. Anyway, so we missed him in the second half for sure, but in the first half of the Boston College game, definitely for sure. But more importantly was the leadership, and I think it took him about 3 or 4 games to really get fully re-engaged and comfortable in what he was doing. I think part and parcel to that was, yeah, that officiating call and the consequences, all that. But I also think it was trying to embrace what it is that Wilcox is trying to do with the defense. But I got to make a statement. I think what Wilcox is trying to do with the defense doesn't fit the people we have out there, my view. And Hayes is the kind of guy that will take what his assignments are, what the direction of the coaching leadership is, and he will absolutely try to make that work, but he's going to also try to make football plays. And the guy can just flat out play football.
Yeah, Thomas, you've had a chance to watch this guy up close a little bit this year, and I know he's got to be, from a linebacker's perspective, you've got to appreciate what he brings to the table.
Yeah, I'm absolutely. Leads the team in tackles with 75 and missing some time. I think something that we're not talking about, just as fans, as people who analyze the game, and it's one of those things that kind of gets swept under the rug, is that the best players on the football field don't always necessarily make the best plays. They put their team, their side of the ball or their position group in the best position to make plays. I remember listening to Lofa when he was in college, and I used to ask him, Lofa, what makes you so good? Why do you think you're one of the best linebackers in the country? He said, because I watch so much film that I can tell everyone else around me what plays are coming. And I think the importance of not only this week but the remainder of the football season is for Hayes to coach up, not even coach up, but to really help the younger guys, help the Sewell Cravens, let them know that, hey, this play is coming. This is their tendencies. Watching as much tape and film as he possibly can, you know, this is when you really get into the chalk talks, not just when the coaches are around, but you have the guys come in for extra film, for extra time, so that the communication that takes place on game day isn't the first time. When you can either give a head nod or a look or a point, and guys know, okay, that's exactly what's happening. And I think he's earned that right to be able to point, to be able to say something, and guys listen up because his play has backed it up. And then, just like you said, Kevin, the guy makes great football plays through his assignment as opposed to just making good football plays. Like, through my assignment, I'm going to make plays. If my gap is the A gap, I'm going to make a TFL, you know, outside of the tackle through the A gap. And so just being 100% engaged, like, this is it. We don't get another season. We don't get another off season, another spring ball. Like, this is it. So it's all hands on deck and everything you've got the rest of the way.
Thomas, give me a thought on Anthony Sorrow, what you have seen from him this year. I think one of the things that I think is really interesting about him and Hayes, these guys don't come off the field. You know, Kevin mentioned earlier that with Josh Shaw needing an extra body for special teams, these guys not only play on defense without a lot of rotation, but they are two of the more active guys on special teams as well.
Right, and just like you said, I mean, that's something that doesn't get talked about either, is that special teams is all heart, right? It's all want to, all desire. Here's guys who are starting, playing 40, 50, 60 snaps a game on defense, and they're still volunteering, well, I guess I'll say volunteering their services on special teams. And comes right now, has 62 tackles. I mean, he was the guy who took over as the leader when Hayes was out. No complaining, no excuses, didn't blame anyone. He just plays football, and that's the kind of guy I like to see. Takes on blocks well, hustles. That's one word that I can think about when I think about him, is that he runs to the ball, and he's knowledgeable of the defense as well.
You know, when I look at his play, Anthony's play, he is excellent tackle to tackle. Really did a wonderful job. Good recognition. I love the way he takes on blockers, which is somewhat a lost art from my perspective. You take on a blocker in a way to stop them from moving upfield on your downfield, actually, because that cuts off backside pursuit. It creates running lanes. It does. So you have to physically come up and meet that blocking challenge, whoever it is, and stop them in the tracks. You got to stun them, and then you got to move. Get off them. Anthony does that really well between the tackles. The sideline to sideline piece is its flow, its pursuit, its speed. He's good as an inside out player, and you know, you got to have that. He plays a good physical brand of inside linebacker football, which is what you have to have. He's got a good nose for the football, and when he's on the field, it makes a difference. I noticed this last year in particular. It was earlier in the season. Anthony was splitting time, right, with
yes.
Lamar. And Lamar is a different type of inside linebacker. He plays a much taller linebacker position style of play. When he takes on a blocker, he's taking him on eyeball to eyeball. Anthony doesn't do that. Anthony comes up as a, you know, not quite as tall as Lamar, and certainly not as tall as most of the offensive linemen coming after him, and stops their charge. That, when Thomas made a really good point, that helps other players. Anthony may not make the play, but he cuts off somebody, he prevents someone else from being cut off who will make the play. And frankly, the defenses are designed to do that very thing. whether it's the defensive lineman taking on blockers to free it up for the linebackers to make the tackle or some combination thereof, and it does vary, you know, and specifically. That is an important component of how a defense actually runs a play against a play.
I want to talk some big picture stuff, guys, about the linebacking position and about the USC experience that you guys both had. You're both so fortunate to play for championship level teams, and this is kind of what I want to get into. But first, I just want to talk about what it means, Trojan linebackers. You know, Kevin, you said some very nice things about Thomas and the way he played. Let's start off with you, Thomas. I want to get your thoughts when you think of the Trojan linebacker position that you played, that Kevin played so well. If you were to describe to somebody what that means and what that is, what would it be?
I think that, just like you said, there's a standard that was set all the way from, I'm sure, even before Kevin went to USC, where you're tough, you're physical, you're smart, and you don't stay blocked. I think to describe a USC linebacker in those words is really what it means. It's the epitome. I mean, so many years, this school, this team, it was really built on the shoulders of defense, and obviously I'm biasly speaking, and having the jokes of it's LBU, you know, Linebacker University. You literally have to be the quarterback of the entire defense, whether it's lining people up, reading the plays, getting everybody to understand what's coming next, the anticipation, and then to be the leader of that side of the ball. I had great mentors. I mean, coming in as a freshman and sitting in a linebacker meeting room with Matt Grudegood, Chance Simmons, mm-hmm. Lofa Tatupu, Oscar Lua, Dallas Sartz. I mean, these were all really good
That's
players.
That's good stuff right there.
Who came before me, who came and I played with. And I just remember how much knowledge these players had of the game. And obviously coming from high school as a pretty good high school football player, you just think, let's just line up and me versus you, right? Will to will, man to man. And it was so much more than that. And I'll never forget when guys would come to the sideline and say that they're tired. And this was probably me being an underclassman saying I was tired. Can somebody else get in for me? And then the upperclassmen would tell me, tired? What do you mean? Like, you take a break or you rest when this game or this practice is over. Like, we don't get tired. And another great quote is Lofa used to tell me, T. Will, don't make excuses, just make plays.
Love it. You know, I'm feeling old here because I played with Mosi, Lofa's dad, and, you know, rest his soul. But, you know, the same Mosi as a fullback had that. He was, frankly, I think from a temperament perspective, was more suited for linebacker than fullback, to tell you the truth. But, you know, to really dovetail on what Thomas is saying, and yes, there's a long tradition well before me of outstanding linebackers. But the mold has been established. The style of play may change a little bit, you know, more of this, less of that, whatever. And everybody brings their own skill package to the situation. But the part that's not negotiable is the toughness. Mental. It starts with mental toughness. It starts with preparation.
Absolutely.
Conditioning, stuff that no one ever sees, no one ever says thank you, and you're not doing it for that purpose. You show up in shape, ready to play. You play every darn down because you never know if you're going to get another chance to play another down of football. So make it count. My dad was a professional football player with the 49ers, and he told me a number of things, but one thing he told me, he says, Kevin, don't ever regret that you could have played harder. I said, okay, I got it. And so I don't regret that I ever could have played harder. I could have played this a little smarter. I could have done this, could have done some technique things, but not effort, not intensity, not focus, and not preparation. Thomas hit it. The film room I spent more time in there than I think anybody else because what I wanted to know as a linebacker and my contemporaries likewise, we would study, 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 study. And we would be looking at just small things, the first half step, the first move, the hand pressures, the head bobs. Those are the kinds of things that you know, good linebackers that are dedicated to what it is that we do will execute against. The physical elements, everybody's got their skills. There isn't one bad athlete on the field, period. All right? They're all good. There's other things that separate the good from the great. I played next to one of the greatest linebackers in USC's history, and that was Richard Wood. And Richard played a totally different style of football than I could play. He was a lot faster than I was. I wasn't slow, but compared to him, I was. All right? But what I could do is I could definitely, I got unblocked really well because I hurt people. And, of course, not permanently, and all the caveats and all the footnotes I got to make on that statement. But that was the type of play that I knew I was good at, how I could execute my assignment. Everybody has that. What I saw with other linebackers was, especially outside linebackers, their assignments are very different. They got to set an edge. They may have pass coverage. They may have to flex out on a slot back, or depending on what the cover calls are, whether it's a 7, an 8, all that's going on, right? Different type of style of play, but and that incredibly important. But for linebackers on the inside, tackle to tackle, boy, I tell you what, we'd get us all in the room, we'd have a reunion, we'd just tell all kinds of stories to tell. It would be fun, actually, to do that. That's not a bad idea.
You ever get that to happen, yeah, that would be a fun event to be at. There is no doubt. Let me ask you guys a quick question. Thomas, you listed some great names that you said you learned from, and then Kevin mentioning Richard Wood. If you guys are going to say through the years, USC linebackers that you've seen, if you want to give 1, 2, 3 names that you say, boy, that guy right there. Kevin, start with you.
Okay. Richard. A lot of people call him Batman. I never did. I always liked his first name, Richard. Probably one of the great first 3-time All-American football player in the history of the university. Yeah, so, enough said. And everybody ran toward me because they didn't want to run toward him. It was great for me. I got to tell you what, it was a beautiful thing. Okay. A person that I think is whom I really enjoy playing with is Clay Matthews. And this was Clay the second, not the third. The third is actually pretty accomplished as well, and I'd throw him in the pantheon as well. But his dad was an outstanding linebacker, someone I enjoyed playing football with. And as I look kind of backwards, this would be more formative to when I was a kid growing up looking at USC football. Adrian Young, great mm-hmm. linebacker, great linebacker.
Same question, mm-hmm. Thomas.
Yeah, I have so many, and I'm not going to be able to give a description, but I'll just give a name, and it's not going to be in any specific order. But obviously, going back to the original, the 55 group, the Willie McGinnis, the Chris mm-hmm. Claiborne, the Junior Seau's, and then moving forward, I mean, so much respect for the Lofa Tutupu, Matt Grudegood, and then, not to leave anyone out, but even playing at the NFL level, I had an amazing experience. 5 years in the NFL was really cool. But with all of that being said, the greatest group of linebackers that I ever played with were those guys who I played with my junior and senior year.
Sure.
The Brian Cushings, the Ray Malugas, Kaluka Maiava, the Malcolm Smith, Keith Rivers, Clay Matthews. And I hope I didn't leave anybody out, but that entire room where every single day, just like you said, Kevin, every single day, if you weren't willing to come and give practice all that you had, you were going to be pulled out. Like, so we almost had to play with a phobia of, are we good enough? Because if you didn't live up to that standard that had been set so many years before us, then you were going to be replaced. It didn't matter if you started last week, you might not start next week. And that's the luxury that we had. But there was so much peer pressure that we had amongst each other, because it's something that's not really displayed, I don't think, in today's game, is that you had to earn it. You had to earn your seat mm-hmm. every single day. And it wasn't by the coach's standard. And please, Ken Norton Jr. was the greatest mm-hmm. linebacker coach that I ever was coached by.
Yep.
But that standard was set by us in the room, where you come in and you know that you had a bad practice and everybody else sees it on film, you're going to get looked at, and you might be sitting in the back of the room by yourself without a chair. Because that's what we knew, that each of us that were on the field represented each of us that weren't.
Thomas so just described championship football right there. What he just described is what happens from Sunday to, you know, Friday, or in the NFL case, you add a day to it. He just described it. It's what you do when no one's looking. And it's that intense. It's just not competition Tuesday or look, it's competition every day. Everybody knew that there was two or three deep behind you that would be love to take your chair, love to take your spot. So you bring it, and you bring it hard. You do your homework. You play ball. You execute against the requirements, and you make plays. And enjoy yourself while you're doing it, for crying out loud. I mean, this is not a practice. This is the real deal.
Let me throw this out. You guys have talked about some great similarities in the preparation and as part of what makes championship football. But Kevin, I'm going to go to you on this because you, when you played for McKay, then you also saw what Thomas went through with Pete. So when you're talking about developing championship mentality, what did you see from what you went through and then what you saw Thomas go through?
Yeah, I tell you, there's commonalities and there's differences, and it's kind of like the difference between, I suppose, somebody likes vanilla ice cream, someone likes chocolate or whatever. Okay. With McKay, he was not your friend. Okay? He was the head coach. He didn't try to make friends. It wasn't among players. I mean, he had his own crowd, of course, but his role was head coach and leader of the football team, and we were going to win football games. Period. And then everything flowed off that. Okay. As far as motivating players, what he did is he brought in players that were motivated, and then we'll sort it out from there. Okay. There was also, and this, maybe a bit different, not so much with Thomas, but for in today's edition, because of our reduction in scholarships, we had a full crowd of guys. So our number twos and threes were pretty darn good. My backup was Clay Matthews, who wasn't half bad, you know? And Richard sitting next to me, he's a three-timer. You know, he made a few tackles in his career. But we all knew that. And there was other examples. But the expectations were, boy, and I'll never forget this, and I'd like to hear, Thomas, about Pete, but McKay, in the 4 years, I think we lost six or seven football games. All right. McKay, after every loss, said almost the same thing. He would say, I did not have you ready to play. And this is what he would say. I did not teach you well enough, because there are no better athletes on a football team in this country than the one sitting in this locker room right now. So get ready for next week, because we're going to play football. And I got to tell you what, if you can't get up and high five on that, well, that would be inappropriate after a loss, but you get the next day you could. That was coach's approach. The position coaches were all skilled, excellent. By the way, I love what Thomas said about Ken Norton Jr. We miss him. I'm telling you, we miss him a lot. I can see a difference in play. I'm not denigrating anybody who's in there, but I tell you what, he was special. And I remember trying to talk him out of going to UCLA, just as a quick sidebar. Obviously unsuccessful. Championship leadership might have different styles. Pete was very little different style than Coach McKay, but the expectations and the deliverables are absolutely the same. And the one thing I'll say about Coach McKay, he was an extraordinary game day coach. Boy, on Saturday or whatever day we were playing, he knew how to coach from the sideline. And he wasn't calling plays, take that for what it's worth, gang. He wasn't calling plays. He was setting the direction of the team, and he made the tough decisions. And he was a gunslinger. People don't realize he would call, fourth down in our own side of the 50. He would go for it on fourth down. Didn't always work out. He always went for two-point conversions when it counted. He didn't care. We're going to win the football game. We're not here to mess around. We're going to win. That was his expectation. So I went on a little long. My apologies, but I got to get that out there. That coach was a teacher. He took responsibility, and he expected you to do the same.
pretty special stuff, Thomas. What do you think of that?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. It's hearing about the past, I mean, it makes you internalize what you went through, and then how is it different? How is it the same? Because the results were the same, right? So it's like, doesn't matter how, what steps you take on your journey. If we're going to end up the same place, then there's nothing right nor wrong about the preparation or the steps in the journey. And it's so cool to hear the talks after those so few and far between losses, right? Because I lost six games my entire time there. And so it sounds like we almost have a spinning image of the same experience. And Coach Carroll would say very similar to that. The one thing he was so excited about is the preparation and the process for the next week. I mean, obviously, every loss hurts because anytime you invest into something, I don't care if it's the market, if it's a home, if it's in a relationship, anything, and it doesn't come out to your expectations, then there's going to be some type of pain felt. But there was never any discouragement. It was always like, okay, we lost. This is the situation. This is the reality. However, we are still in control of our own destiny. And that was the focus. Day one every year was own the Rose Bowl, right? Two things he talked about. Coach Carroll talked about at the very beginning of each season. This is the football. On offense, keep it. On defense, go get it. And after he said that, own the Rose Bowl. Because if you own the Rose Bowl, obviously winning the Pac-10 at the time, and you're always in control of your destiny. And that was his outlook. And I think his whole Win Forever book, mantra, and his program, it speaks volumes to not just football, but it's life. And I'm sure, just like you said, Kevin, the experience or the conversation in the piece with your dad saying, you know, never look back and have regrets on your effort and your preparation. It's you could take that with you for the rest of your life. And things happen. And things did happen six times. I mean, hell, we lost the Rose Bowl game against Texas, and Coach Carroll wasn't pleased about it, and neither were anybody else in the locker room. But he was extremely excited about day one of that off season, and that just tells you what kind of coach and human being he is.
Amen, brother. I'm ready to go play, but I tell you what, it'd be embarrassing.
I'm sure you got either, Kevin.
You guys got a couple reps in, yeah, I'm sure. Hey guys, this was pretty special stuff, guys. I appreciate this and the chance to really, really delve into not only the position talk, but the experiences that you guys went through. And it is really eerie the way you just mentioned, Thomas, how similar at the end of the day your guys' experience was. Let's just close this up with a quick thought from each of you. Kevin, go ahead and get us started.
Well, you know, I'm really looking forward to Saturday. I know that a fair amount of the USC fan base is a little sheepish right now, a little reticent to put it out there that, you know, oh my gosh, UCLA's, they've had us pretty well tidied up for the last couple of years, and oh my gosh, we're going up there and Hundley, blah, blah. Hey, look, you know what? Strap on the helmets. Let's go out and just get it done. We have all the tools, all the necessary elements to have a very successful outcome on Saturday. I'm looking forward to it. I cannot think of going into a football game where I look at it and says, you know, I don't know, I'm not sure if we can win this one. I never think that, and it's not Pollyannish. I know the sport. Thomas knows the sport. Gary, you know the sport. Let me tell you what. I look at this team, I go, you know what? I turn these guys loose. They are going to win a football game. You watch.
I couldn't agree more, Kevin. This is, in a long time, this is one of the rivalry games that actually have some type of implication on the end of the season. USC wins with, obviously, help of other teams. There's a really good chance at the South, and then you got UCLA who's in, you know, they're top 10, I believe, right now in the rankings. So now there's some big time bowl implications riding on their rest of their season. This whole city's fired up. I was at the gym this morning and you see UCLA, USC shirts. And just like you said, Kevin, let the guys loose. Let the athletes be athletes. Coaches, coach your tails off. And let's go get a win, because it's not far-fetched. We're not playing the New England Patriots. We're playing the UCLA Bruins. And it's so possible to turn, and it's time for a shift in this city. And I believe that this Saturday is definitely a start for that shift. And bringing all the good players back on this side of town and continuing the winning traditions.
I love what Coach McKay said on this matter. He said there is absolutely nothing worse than losing to UCLA, and there is nothing better than beating Notre Dame. Amen to that.
And with that, let's take that over the next 2 weeks without a doubt. Thanks, guys, for the time. Appreciate it. For Kevin Bruce and Thomas Williams, this is Gary Paskowitz. You're listening to the We Are SC Podcast.